I speak to you in the name of the God of all the saints. Amen. The riddle of the world is this: shall sorrow and love be reconciled at last when the promised kingdom comes? So said Dorothy Sayers in her play, The Man Born to be King. Today we celebrate the Feast of All Saints. We remember all of those who spent their lives trying to unlock that riddle. We baptize Rinaldo and Cadron Hoyt into this riddle, knowing that they will spend the rest of their lives seeking that same reconciliation. If the riddle is ever to be solved, it will be somewhere in the story of our people, because this Feast of All Saints is the feast of our people. And here's how it goes. It was a photograph that always made me wince. In black and white, slightly faded, stands a roughly outfitted wagon useful for holding and hauling household items. Next to the wagon, in his swamp best, leans Uncle Theodore, long shaggy beard overflowing his musket. A dusty floppy hat hovers on his head. At Uncle Theodore's feet curls a mangy dog of indecipherable breed. Every so often during my childhood, my father would show us this photograph and grandly pronounce, "This is your great-great Uncle Theodore fish-eating creek. This is your ancestor." I would have settled for Theodore Mopsuestia, the ancient leader of the church at Antioch, or maybe Theodore of Tarsus, the early Archbishop of Canterbury, even Theodore of the Chipmunks. But long before I roamed the practice rooms and opera stages of Indiana University Music School, long before I sat at the feet of scholars at Yale Divinity School, I was a child of the Florida swamps and palmetto scrubs. I was born into this world on the salt breeze of the ocean, with orange blossoms rustling my new hair and cowboys among my ancestors. Ancestors are funny people, you know. We don't get to choose them. Like the tattooed figures who come to life at night in Ray Bradbury's story, they surround us as close as garments, reminding us always of our origins. Both glorious blossoms and dead leaves fill out our family trees, and they make up our people. It might be an especially southern phrase, our people, but in the end, there's no better way to put it. They are my people, all of them. Those ranchers with leathered skin who pioneered Immokalee, Florida. The grandfather in khaki pants and white shirt, Tampa Nugget cigar clenched firmly in his teeth, driving his Ford through the fields to check on the cows. My other grandfather, solemnly showing me his Shriner's sword in the dim light of the closet. All the aunts and uncles who talked funny. The hard-shell believers of the New Mount Zion Baptist Church in Zoffo Springs, where theology and daily life were staunch and dusty, burnished by hot sun, and flamed by old certainties and new faith. All of them, my people. And even if I now worship with the bells and smells of the Episcopal Church and draw intellectual sustenance from the New York Review of Books, they are still all my people. Uncle Theodore of Fish-Eaten Creek, Captain Francis Asbury Henry, Hampton Haven Cerency, DeWitt Talmadge Farabee, and all the rest. Yet every time I join my ancestors, I am surrounded by love and afflicted by sorrow. And the circle of my people always reforms the riddle of the world. My mother's father lived in a society in which black people were treated as less than fully human. Granddaddy would never have said it exactly so, but he shared the attitudes of a whole region, not to say a nation, about race. He was kind, paternally kind. When I reached a certain age, I could not reconcile this great man with his cigar aroma halo, who gathered me to his bristly cheeks and crinkled his gruff face with a smile, and gave me ever more affection than he could say. I could not reconcile him with the great man at whose funeral black people sat in a separate part of the church. My father's father was a good man, truly and deeply an honest public servant, county clerk in Lee County for 40 years. He bore many scars from a hard life of hard work and the sorrowful work of shepherding his family through the Great Depression, knowing his children felt poor and not able to join the right circles of friends. Granddaddy also harbored the sentiments of an age. In a letter he wrote to my grandmother's parents, asking her hand in marriage, he said, "As to religion, I don't see much difference between Baptists and Methodists and Presbyterians, but I'm a good Protestant, and I hate the Catholics." But this great man, flawed and narrow in his vision in some directions, became old great-granddaddy Farabee for my firstborn son. In his last years, my grandfather sat patiently, hour by hour, read to his great-grandson, explaining how toilets work, what makes a car engine go, and how rain happens. That's how it is with your people. They constrict you with sorrow, and they fill you with love and joy. You want to escape their grasp, and then you lunge back for solace and company. At least that's how the riddle of the world winds through my people. On Labor Day, we always attended the Roberts family reunion in Zoffo Springs. Roberts was my great-grandmother's name. The pool there was part pond, part bottomless spring, part wall pool, and by afternoon, early afternoon, we were sprouting gills. On the wide porch of the community center sat the great aunts and uncles, presiding and letting wisdom flow across the yard and over all of us. Some of them were really strange to me, child of the swamps and palmetto scrub, but by then, child of the bright lights of Miami. They had strange names like DT and BP and whatever they called themselves. The women had heavy bosoms, tightly curled white hair, and voices that summoned mosquitoes, sand, and heat. Mostly on those early September holidays, I remember the aunts and uncles rocking on the porch, and I remember the overflowing tables of food. Fried chicken, baked ham, potato salad, swamp cabbage, collard greens with bacon, sweet iced tea, and for dessert, watermelon. Not the genetically corrected seedless watermelons we have today, but melons studded with hundreds of good spitting seeds. And the afternoon wound down in a rain of watermelon seeds, one last jump in the spring-fed pool, and then a long drive home to Miami. I knew they were my people, all those strange aunts and uncles, cousins I never saw otherwise, the old women with shelf bosoms and the old men with white bristles on their chins. My people. And they came with food. And they took me in. And they overlooked my newfound sophistication. And I didn't choose them and they didn't choose me. We were just people. When we got returned to Miami, to the great towering church in our neighborhood where my father was the pastor, where I went to Sunday school every week and sang in the choir and just hung around, I heard the great promise from 1 Peter. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Somehow I think that the gospel promises that my people translates as salvation. And we only learn later that God's embrace of people far exceeds ours. But we are meant to know one another as cousins spitting watermelon seeds under the stern laughter of the aunts and uncles. I believe that when the promised kingdom comes and sorrow and love are at last reconciled, I will be able to call all those who shared this journey with me my people. In a few minutes, we will gather around the baptismal font. We will hold Rinaldo and Cadron close to us. Then we will wash them with the water of grace and mercy, and they will become our people, and we will be their people. and they will never be alone again. In the years to come, they will know both sorrow and love, and the riddle will be difficult to solve. But if they remember back to this day, this great feast of all saints, they will be strong. The great film Amistad tells the true story of African men and women and children illegally captured, imprisoned, and sold into slavery. As the ship taking them along the Cuban coast approached their destination, they mutinied, preferring death if necessary to slavery. Eventually, they landed in Connecticut, and they became the focus of legal action. Their case finally reached the United States Supreme Court, where John Quincy Adams was hired to argue on their behalf. Just before going into the Supreme Court chambers, Adams said to Cinque, the leader of the Africans, "We will not be going in alone. We have right. We have righteousness on our side." Cinque responded, "I know we will not be alone. I will call to my ancestors. I will call into the past, back to the beginning of time, and beg them to come and help me at the judgment. I will reach back and draw them."